Big time wins from both the baseball teams. The Mets with a rally in the eighth inning. And, you know, what you like, and a couple of different things about it, right? Mauricio with a home run, and he avoids the IL. He avoids being sent down yet again as the knee issues of Marte send him to the IL. Now that Winker's back, you assumed Marte might be Mauricio might be the odd man out until obviously Marte got hurt. So he's now been saved twice from being sent down, and he comes through with a home run. And you could just see, like, his ability oozes out of him. He's just got to get a little bit more consistency, and that comes with playing. But we'll see how that goes. But he comes through in a big spot. And then, obviously, after Clay Holmes implodes, and I don't have a problem. Like, I know a lot of Met fans want to pull Clay Holmes. I get it. The bullpen right now, you're trying to get through six innings. Is Clay Holmes the kind of pitch you can get through six innings is the question right now. He hasn't been able to. They don't have enough guys who do, quite honestly. So I understand why Mendoza's trying to get through it with him. But he obviously gives up after the Mets take the lead on the double, take a 2-1 lead. He comes right out and gives up the four runs, and it's 5-1. 5-2, rather. And then the eighth inning, that rally, to me, is what you're looking for the team, right? You're looking for those three guys to click together. That's what this team is built on, this offense. And yes, the bottom of the lineup, not good enough, hasn't been good enough all year. A lot of guys have really faltered, even including, you know, what has happened? Like, what has happened to Vientos? He pinch hits for Winker, doesn't come through. Then in the 10th, they pinch hit for him to lay down a bunt, which they already had a run in, right? So they had a run in, first and second, nobody out. Already having the run in, I don't mind the bunt. If it's first and second and the run's not in yet, I don't know if I want to play for just one run. But having the one-run lead, I don't mind it. But think about where Vientos was last year. Think about how important he was to the offense and who he was and how great he was and how powerful he was and then what he did in the postseason and what we expected of him heading into this season. And it's at the point now where he comes off the bench to pinch hit and fails, and then in the 10th inning, already up one in extras, instead of allowing him to swing it and hopefully hit a three-run bomb or come through with a big base hit, they pinch hit him the sacrifice bunt. Now, again, if they're already with one run, I don't mind playing for a run in that inning, and they end up not getting it, which is frustrating because you wanted to create a little bit of, you know, space, especially in extra innings, obviously, where Baltimore was starting the game with a runner on second base. And again, Baltimore doesn't bunt to start it off to try and move over. Like, this is just how the game is played these days. But Vientos being pinch hit in that spot to lay down a bunt speaks volume. And look, I get it. He's been that bad. But just think about what we thought of Vientos heading in and to what's happening to him now. And he's not good defensively, so you can't justify playing him unless he's hitting. But he's also a player I've seen carry the team practically at times last year. And it's hard for me not to want to see if I can get that guy back. And right now, with the way Mauricio plays defense at third base and him hitting home runs, I'm not sure how this Vientos playing time works out. He's been a butcher at third base, so like it's very difficult. But I mean, man, from where they were last year with him to where you are now, can you imagine pinch hitting for Vientos in that spot last year? Crazy. This year makes sense. Again, if the one run wasn't in already, I wouldn't have done it. But because I've seen a couple people, I know Evan put out a quick thing from Barcelona, which was a beautiful city. I was there about 10, 12 years ago. Beautiful city. It was a beautiful city. Okay, I was on the bus. One of those double-decker buses, went around. You plug the headphones in. They tell you stories about everywhere you go. I don't know if you had one of those. They're fun. Good food. I saw, a couple naked people at the beach, But yeah, Barcelona was nice. And Evan was there, and he kind of talked about the idea that he hated the bunt. I didn't hate the bunt there. I didn't hate trying to get through the inning with Clay Holmes. It's not ideal. And then the only real decision I disagreed with on some level was Diaz off 10 pitches. Now, Razaban comes back in and gets the job and gets the save, but you really want to lock that game down. Because that's a big-time win. It's not like they're, you know, it's not like they're coming off two back-to-back series wins. It's not a devastating loss if you lose that game necessarily, but what the win could mean is what I'm looking for. And so to me, Diaz only throwing 10 pitches in the ninth, I probably would have brought him out for the 10th. He's come out and pitched multiple innings before. You know, I want to win this game. This is a big come-from-behind game. That's the kind of game I want to really stamp and be able to point back to. So I didn't agree with that. Everything else from Mendoza, I didn't have a problem with. I didn't mind the bunt. I understand trying to get through it with Clay Holmes. I would have brought Diaz back out for the 10th. But Razaban got through it. Diaz is available for later today. So everything worked out. And that eighth inning where you get the single from Nimmo, the two-run shot from Lindor, which to me is the biggest hit of the game. The biggest hit of the game is the home run that cuts it from 4-2. And then you get the obvious bomb from Soto gets on base, and then you get the bomb from Alonso that ties the game. But to me, it's that spark that the Lindor home run gives you, that bomb to deep center field, and that feeling of, all right, we're on. That's the biggest hit. To me, that's the biggest hit of the inning. And what you haven't seen from the Mets at any point this year is all three of those guys going at the same time. When the other two were going, Soto was, you know, moping around. And yes, that's, and I can't tell you how many different people hit me up on Twitter, and you can at CMACWFN, and I go, oh, is Soto still moping? No, he's not. Does that mean he wasn't a month ago when we said, and not just me, but everyone said he was? He was. Like and nobody said it was going to continue forever. I never said, oh, this is Juan Soto the Mets are going to get for the next 15 years. We were all puzzled by it. And we all expected it to end sooner rather than later. But the opinion of him being unhappy at the start of the year, I'm sorry, I stick by it. He wasn't. I don't know why. It's not because he missed being a Yankee. I never said it was. But something was up with him. And now it's not. Good for him. And good for the Mets. And he's been hot for the last month, but you haven't seen Lindor be hot with him. And Alonso hasn't been god-awful, and he's had little stretches of three or four games here or there where he's come through with some big hits, but he hasn't really been the same player he was at the start of the season in April. Still good in the clutch a lot, but not really going. And now, hopefully, Lindor is snapping out of it. Good series, you know, a couple big hits over the last couple series. Now he hits a big home run in the eighth to start that rally. Alonso with another clutch home run. Soto's, you know, snubbed in the All-Star game with an above 900 OPS and has been going great since the beginning of June. So that's what you're looking for at the Mets. You've got answers coming back in the rotation. Hopefully Razaban and Reed Garrett over their last couple of performances are starting to turn it around. You know how good Diaz is, so that hopefully solidifies your bullpen while you're out still shopping for more. You get two guys coming back from the rotation, which Lindor already has told you. Those are like trade acquisitions. And now if you can get those three, your best three hitters hot at the same time, now you're hoping to break out of this, what has been an offensive slump, and it's been awoken a little bit. They scored 12 runs on Saturday. They've been scoring some runs over the last couple games. They beat up on the Milwaukee Phenom in the second game of that doubleheader. So the offense is starting to come around, but it's yet to really feel like all three guys going at the same time. And sometimes, look, it's not going to happen for long stretches. You understand that's baseball. And part of having three guys like that is that you don't need all three of them to go crazy at one time. You can have Pete Alonso carry the team for a month. You can have Soto carry the team for a month. Lindor carry the team for a month. But they can be dynamic, which this offense has not been for any stretch of time this entire season. They can be dynamic if all three are going to get going. 888-808-1019. Let's get to the calls. Alex in Tenafly. What's up, Alex?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you, buddy?
I got to say, the fact that DJ's moving to the bench, you know, it's such a waste. The guy's making $15 million a year, and now he's practically on the bench. And there's now only two scenarios I can think of where he's in the lineup. One is that, you know, you either, you know, sit Goldschmidt, catch Rice, DJ can play first, or you sit Stanton along with a comp, with someone like Goldschmidt or Rice, and then DJ can DH. I mean the fact that he's an above average hitter, you know, and he has to move to the bench is such a shame, and I wouldn't mind just trading him at this point.
Yeah, I mean, well, there's no trading.
And as for the rotation,
he has no value.
You know, the rotation is very shorthanded, and, you know, Schmidt's out for the year. I was hoping to trade for someone like Chris Sale before he got hurt because, you know, he doesn't have a lot left on his contract, and he's still got something left, but I can't think of any other starting pitcher that Cashman can go out and try to make a trade for.
Oh, there's plenty. There's none as good as the Cy Young Award winner of last year, no. But you're not going to get that. You got to get... You know, there's serviceable starting pitching, right? Seth Lugo might become available with Kansas City as they're struggling to have the same type season they had last year. Obviously, Severino with the A's could be on his way out. He's pitched much better outside of their minor league ballpark in Sacramento. There's a handful of starters out there. Is it possible still, you know, he's starting to play a little bit better than he is at the beginning of the year? He was poised to be the big pitching name on the market, but then had a miserable season in Alcantara in Miami. So those are the names that you're looking for. You're not going to get last year's Cy Young, but there are still starting pitchers that can help the team. Because right now, it feels like it's Rodon, it's Fried, it's Warren. And I don't know who the fourth starter is.
Well, let's hope the kid does a good job.
Well, yeah, Schlittler will make his debut tonight. But again, look, DJ LeMahieu, when I say for the last month he's been a slightly above average major league hitter, it's with very little pop. His on-base percentage has been fairly good, and he's hit fairly well with runners in scoring position. I have no problem with him going to the bench. I don't. It's not the worst thing in the world. And it's not a shame, and you certainly can't trade him. He makes $15 million next year. Ain't nobody trading for DJ LeMahieu. So you could, for a statue, can't play third, physically cannot play third, and, you know, for all intents and purposes, cannot play second. There's ways to work him into the lineup, and apparently he didn't take it all that well. The end of his career. Not many guys take it well. I don't know what, you could play him at first, but they got too many good players to play him at first. I mean, the odd day of putting, they have Rice and they have Goldschmidt. And they have Bellinger, who could play first base. It's hard to envision a scenario where they play him at first base. I think he is a pinch hitter. He's a pinch hitter, and maybe the odd day that you want to give against a tough lefty, maybe you want to give Jazz a day off. He's dealing with the shoulder injury. He's had the oblique injury. He's got the groin injury. He just had his first stolen base attempt in the last 20-something games because he tweaked his groin a little bit. You could play him at second base. You could DH him on the off day if you'd like to. But yeah, no, he's not going to play very much. And then they're going to go out at the trade deadline and add another infielder. I don't think DJ LeMahieu was long for this team. I don't think there's a real solution in it. So it's not, but are you that upset about it? Like, I don't love it because Peraza can't hit. That's the only reason. If Peraza could hit a little bit, if Peraza had an OPS in the 600s, in the high 500s, I mean, I think Peraza's OPS is in the 400s. He cannot hit at all. I still think they have to do it because he's far superior defensively, and we were just tired of watching that disaster. But the only reason why I'm even somewhat concerned about it or cautious about it or worried about it is that Peraza is an awful hitter. But DJ LeMahieu being done with the New York Yankees is not something that anyone is concerned about or sad about. I shouldn't say sad about. We're all ready for it. We're all ready to have it happen. And I respect DJ, and he had a couple of insanely good years. Insanely good. And if it wasn't for Chapman giving up the walk-off home run to the clearly buzzer-wearing Jose Altuve in 2019, that home run is a it's kind of forgotten now, that game-tying home run in Game 6 of the ALCS in 19, but that was a huge moment. And then in 2020, he won a batting title, second runner-up, third overall in the MVP voting. Like, DJ was great on a two-year contract for $24 million that, you know, nobody else wanted to sign. He was going to go to the Rays. And the Yankees, who already had second base, you know, filled and had the infield filled, decided to take a chance on him. And he was terrific for them. I don't begrudge DJ anything. I wish him well, but it's time to, it's over. It's over. Tommy in Staten Island. What's up, Tommy?
Yo, what's going on? See, Max?
What's up, buddy? How are you? Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm driving up to Endicott, New York right now.
Endicott?
Dick Sports Pro. Yeah, we got the Dick Sports Pro-Am. Me and my buddy Neil are playing. Looking
nice.
To find out who we're going to get paired up with. My bud just retired. Just loving what you're talking about. I agree. It was a good win last night for the Mets. All the big guys, you know, they all had it rolling at the same time last night, which I've been waiting about the better part of, what, 3-4 weeks now?
Mm-hmm.
It's been a rough stretch, but it's been better of late.
Yeah.
You know, I was asking the call screen. I mean, what are we adding? What are we adding to this team? I mean, I'm still unsure with this bullpen.
Yeah, I think that's what you're adding. I think you're looking at, the Mets are looking at relief help and probably a center fielder. I would think that's the positions they are looking to acquire. Maybe some starting pitching, but I think it would be at the fifth, sixth, seventh thought, like, you know, a depth piece so they don't have to call up kids from the minors that they don't want to call up. Like, for spot starts, like, I don't think they're going to get impact arms. Plus, you know, they've been very good at, you know, the pitching lab has done a remarkable job over the last 2 years of finding diamonds in the rough. So maybe someone we're not thinking of for the back end of the rotation and some depth. But, like, I don't see a major piece to the rotation or an impact to the rotation. And you're looking at outfield and you're looking at bullpen help. That's it. You're looking at another arm or two out of the bullpen. So I think the Yankees right now have more holes and more needs because the Clark Schmidt injury has now opened it up to kind of needing. Right now, they don't have a fourth starter for a playoff series. And Will Warren is the third starter. That's a little scary. Now, they are getting back Luis Gil, and his rehab assignment starts, I think Boone said, on Sunday. So you're looking at least a month from Sunday, probably more than that, maybe a little bit more than that. So you're looking at, what's today? Wednesday the 9th. You're looking at maybe by the week of August 18th, that week of the second or third week of August, and then giving him a run-up. I don't know if that's enough time to find him. I don't know if that's enough time to find it suitable to make him your third or fourth starter in a playoff series. Now, depending on what they get at the trade deadline, if they find a starter, and again, there are some issues. Like, here's the thing I wanted to talk about. Here's a question. Is Hal willing to take on money? How does Hal view this season? Because it's one thing to try and stay under, right, and see how it went, and they believed in a lot of the pivots, and the American League is down. But now you look at it, they're in second place, they're three games back. You've got Judge in the middle of his prime. You gave him a big-time contract. You're expecting to win a championship with Aaron Judge. This team is still good enough, and with some key additions, could be, you know, right there to win a championship without question. So there are some names that make sense to bring in if they're available that would just cost you a lot of money. Like, I heard someone talking about, and I, you know, me and Zoo actually talked about it yesterday, was, you know, Jose Ramirez with Cleveland. They lost 10 in a row. They're 10 games under 500. Would they be willing to move him? And you know that would be for a salary dump. Would you be willing to take on that kind of money? Now, for him, you're talking about Jason Dominguez, Lombard, and Spencer Jones. I'm not all three, but one for sure, maybe two. plus taking on the money. That's how good he is. And that's how favorable that contract is. But would Hal be willing to do that? I heard someone bring it up on the morning show or somewhere about, you know, the idea of Jacob DeGrom out of Texas. And Texas is like feeling like a place that could be willing to shake some things. I think Evan brought up a tremendous idea in Seager. If you trade for Seager and ask him to play third base, oh, you're playing guys out of position. Oh, shut up. I don't care. I think Seager could play third base. Now, he's off injured, and it would take a ton of money, but it probably wouldn't take that many prospects, considering how long that contract is, how much money you'd be taking off their hands. Like, Seager is an impact player. Jacob DeGrom, impact starter. Jose Ramirez, impact player. But well above the luxury tax. And if you do something like that, there's no way they're going to sign Tucker in the offseason. So how is this team viewed right now? And would they make impact moves like that? Now, I don't know if that's even on the table, if Texas is even willing to deal those players, if Cleveland is willing to move Jose Ramirez. I would think probably not, considering the bargain that contract is. I know they want to save money, and maybe they don't think they'll win in the next couple of years, and he's already 33, 34, or whatever, how old Ramirez is. So maybe they'd be willing to get that money off their hands. But, I mean, that's a great player for a fair, like beyond fair, team-friendly contract. They got to win some games. They got to sell the fans on something, and that's about as good a bargain as there is in Major League Baseball. So I don't know if they'd be willing to do that. Are the Texas Rangers willing to, you know, say, hey, we won our championship. Seager won his MVP in the World Series. He's injured a lot. This team isn't hitting. You know, maybe it's time to revamp this thing and attack it a different way. You know, we got an older manager, Bochy, who's probably on his way out now. Let's just start this whole thing fresh. Would they be willing to look to get that money off the books? Would they be willing to look and get Jacob DeGrom's money off the books? Would he be willing to come to New York? Like, these are questions, but there are some money pieces out there that theoretically, I'm just spitballing here at 3:24 in the morning. I have no inside information that any of these guys are available, but it's a thought about, is Hal willing to go above and beyond the luxury tax to improve this team's chances of winning a championship? And that's at the core of the question for a lot of fans. Right, because I'll push back on the George stuff. I even did on Twitter today, and we can get into it, about, you know, people were killing Michael Kay for talking, going on a rant on his radio show about, oh, my, you want the culture changed? You want the culture changed with Aaron Boone? You know, it's ridiculous. They were in the World Series last year, blah, blah, blah. And then he's talking about how players in 93, like Jimmy Key, changed the culture of the Yankees. And I saw a bunch of people on Twitter going, oh, my God, this guy doesn't oh, God forbid we ask for a culture change from Aaron Boone. He's talking about the culture change from 93. Doesn't he understand the hypocrisy? Well, there's one problem with that. The Yankees went to the World Series last year, and before 1993, the Yankees lost 100 games. The culture needed a little bit more of a defining change. You know what I'm saying? Culture was a little worse with Mel Hall. A little worse. But is he willing to be his father and make the big moves, pay the tax, put the money in the pocket of the Tampa Bay Rays and all the other teams that don't want to spend money and still try to compete to beat you? Are you willing to do that to chase a championship with this team? And forego, I would think, you do any of those moves, you are not signing. You are not signing Kyle Tucker. You can forget it. So, like, that's the question I have with Hal and what he would be willing to do. Because if you look at it, right, you could trade some pieces. You can try and get some money off, right? You can do those moves while offsetting some minor contracts, right? Like, if you really wanted to, if you felt that improved you, I don't know if I would do it. This is the buy-sell thing. Like, would anybody be willing to take on a one-year contract of, like, just to save the $6 million from Goldschmidt the rest of the way? Like, if you take on a Seager to play third base, and now you could just play Rice at first, and you trade Goldschmidt to offset $6 million from the contract that they're, you know, it's not like Goldschmidt's going to be here next year. Same thing with Trent Grisham, right? Could you offset, I think he makes $6 million, so $3 million, but that's where you're at with the luxury tax. But next year, Stanton's money comes from 32 down to 19. There's going to be some money off the books. Obviously, Goldschmidt's not there. Grisham's not there. There's some money coming off the books next year, and you expect all of that money go to Tucker. If you're willing to go over the luxury tax just this year and trade for some of these big money pieces and then forego signing Tucker next year and live with Corey Seager, that helps you now, and it makes your team better next year. Like, there are some ways to get creative. I don't know if I expect it, but I'm curious to see if those kind of options are being discussed for the Yankees. Is a money dump being discussed with the New York Yankees? Is that something even palatable to Hal Steinbrenner right now? And my gut feeling is no. My gut feeling is no. Now, I think he'll go out and sign, or at least really attempt to sign Kyle Tucker next year when he gets all this money off the books. But I think he'd rather try and stay on the luxury tax this year and then go attack him next year while money's coming off the books. And that's where the fan base gets annoyed. And I understand it. Why not get a third base? Well, we're right at the luxury tax. Well, that's, who cares? They need a third baseman. Right now, the team needs trades. Well, you can't take on too much money in these trades, Brian. You got to be very creative and make sure you don't bring on more than $4 million to make sure we're under the luxury tax. Well, that's great, Hal. Do you want to win a World Series? Do you want to be, you know, like, that's the question that a lot of Yankee fans have about this owner. Stuart in Brooklyn. What's up, Stu?
You're on fire today, aren't you now, buddy?
I'm trying.
Listen, like I said to Zoo, we got to get, they've got to get, thank God, finally. How long did it take to move Jazz to second base?
Yeah, a little bit too long. I do understand it now a little bit more that DJ LeMahieu is physically unable to play third base. Like, and again, Peraza can't hit, and the offense was right in the middle of a horrific slump, and DJ LeMahieu's been fairly good over the last month offensively. So I understood it.
He's
terrible.
He's not close.
No.
And the thing is, he was great. What was it, 19 and 20? He played his heart out.
No, he was great.
You know, the unfortunate thing that happened to him was the foot injury, the first one. Mm-hmm. That really started a cycle of spiraling downward in his career because he could never recover from all those injuries to his feet. And the thing is, Jazz playing second base, that's a relief. Now, you're talking about Corey Seager and Ramirez. That would be good. But
they'd be great.
Like you just said, is he going to spend? And you're right, 100%. You are so right. No, he won't spend. And the thing is, the fan base has every right to get upset. Because you want to see winning baseball. You do want to see a championship, especially with Judge and Cole in getting onward toward the back nine, approaching the back nine.
I mean, but Judge has got to perform in the World Series.
There you go.
It's
major answer because
he's got to be part of it. It's not like, oh, build a championship around Aaron Judge and then let them win it for him. He's got to go out there and win it too.
He's got to go out there and win it. I mean, everybody screams about Stanton, but then in every postseason, who's the one man that's leading the charge offensively? Giancarlo Stanton.
That's right.
He does. He leads every year. And the thing is, he can't be the only one. We have to have other players.
I totally agree. But like, and thank you for the call. The one thing I'll say in that we expect winning baseball. That's where I guess I disagree than most Yankee fans. They've given you winning baseball. They have not given you the ultimate win, but they have given you winning baseball. Like when we say as Giant fans, man, I just want some winning football. We don't necessarily mean I want the Super Bowl. And I know it's different for New York Yankees, but like that's what bothers me sometimes. Like the idea that we talk about it like, oh my God, I can't take this team anymore. How much can we take? I can't continue to look at all this crap. And I'm like, I was in the backyard with my son and my friends brought the TV outside. We had the fire going. I was having a great night watching the Yankees play in the World Series. Let alone, forget that, I watched them win the pennant. Celebrating with my son, jumping up and down. How many of those memories did the Knicks give you? How many of those memories do the Giants give you, right? Two over the last, four in total, two over the last 15, 16 years. It's all, I mean, how many of those moments have the Jets given you? Now, I know baseball's different. No salary cap. Different sport. I get it. And the Yankees are expected. But like when we kill them and scream and I can't take anymore and I can't take anymore. My son's 8 years old. The one good memory I have of him is watching the Yankees and Juan Soto hit that home run and scream at the top of our lungs and then watch them celebrate going to the World Series. That happened last year. So excuse me if I don't hate everybody. Excuse me if I don't think they're all just the worst at what they do. Excuse me if I'm not ready to fire everybody at the first, you know, three-week struggle. And I know it's not the first, it's every year. I don't care. Last year, World Series, I was watching it. Me and my son jumping up and down, wearing the big Yankee chain he bought at Yankee Stadium. It's a fond memory. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Quick break, more of your calls next. We'll be right back. The one thing that I saw last night in the Yankee broadcast that I don't know why they did it, and I'm not normally one who gets or cares that much about this stuff, but I don't know if you were watching, but I forget what inning it was. I guess let me go back and see when Cal Raleigh actually got the base hit. But Cal Raleigh is on first base, and they're talking about how his nickname is the Big Dumper. Because he's got a thick, he's got a thick booty. No other way to put it. I suppose there is, but that's the one I chose. And they didn't even just like show him. And Kay and O'Neill are talking about it. And then the cameraman, not once, not twice, but three separate times, zooms in to almost the entire screen being Cal Raleigh's ass. I know they're talking about it. It was uncomfortable. Like, the second time, I was like, all right, we get it enough. The third time, it was like, it's not that funny. And please, it's weird. I don't know what it was, but they zoomed in on it. And when I say zoomed in on it, like, they were trying to help me figure out what he had for lunch. Like, enough. We get it. He's thick. I think he beat out a double play. That's what it was. He beat out a double play. He beat out a double play, standing on first. They're talking about his nickname is the Big Dumper. And they are zooming in on him. I was like, what are you guys doing? I know Kay's talking about it and you're having some fun, and then Kay's like, oh, please don't do that, so you went back for it. We all agreed with Kay on this one. No need for any more of that, please. The rest of the series, I know he hit that home run late, which annoyed me, because now he's kept the two home run lead over Judge, who hit a home run himself in this game, and is fully back. I mean, Judge looks fully back, which is nice to see and very important for this team. But Cal Raleigh's one hell of a hitter. He's entering, you know, really crazy territory. I think Michael Kay said on the broadcast, there are only 14 catchers in Major League Baseball history who have more home runs in a season than Cal Raleigh has right now. That's impressive. And it's up there with Barry Bonds with the most home runs ever before the All-Star break. So he's having a great year. He's not having a Judge-type year, because he hits home runs and drives and runs, but everything else, batting average, everything else is not there. Although his OPS is pretty damn freaking high because, you know, he's hit 35 home runs. But, you know, the great Hartlieb, which I know because my best friend growing up through life and, you know, elementary school and high school and everything, my best friend Mike, his last name is Lieb, which I'm told means love. So this is literally, you know, heart love. And I don't heart him or love him, as I believe his ERA is now 40. But if you get a chance, go watch the Yankee broadcast and see them zoom in on the big dumper. I was like, what are they doing? And I know it's like funny and they're having a joke of it, but it was like, this is awkward. It was just awkward. I don't know what it was. It was just awkward.
It really is when the TV stations or broadcasts get in on some of these jokes. A lot of the time it works and it's funny.
Yeah.
But there are these occasions where it's like, oof.
Yeah, it didn't work. I don't know.
I don't need to see that.
And the zoom in was too tight. And again, it's not like it's...
Hey, now.
Like, I don't know. It's not like it's like comically large. He's just thick. He's got like Boomer Esiason would tell you, he would be a great quarterback, Raleigh, if he would enter the NFL because he's got thick hips and butt. But it's not like... It's not like Carnival or, you know, one of those, you know, one mirrors or something. It's not, I wouldn't pay.
Step right up.
Yeah, step right up and see the big dumper. You've never seen anything like it in your life, folks. Share a bench with the big dumper. If you can fit, like, it's not like, you know, watch him bend over and eclipse the moon. Like, it's not anything like that. It's just... He's just a little thick, and they're zooming in on it. And I'm like, oh, my God. It's awkward. And I think he had a little dirt stain on it, too, right in the wrong spot. And you're like, oh, my God, please. Don't just, you know. It was a little bit much. 888-808-1019. Let's get back to the calls. Kevin and Copag. What's up, Kevin?
What's up, C-Max?
What's up, brother?
I wear my badge proud. I called Richard Neer a couple of years ago. I said Rosario and Jimenez for Lindor. So I'm one of the fan callers.
Wow, how about that?
It was pretty close.
You nailed it. So but you forgot Cookie. They got Cookie Carrasco back.
But I'm thinking Mauricio, Vientos, and Beatty. You got a shortstop. You got a second baseman, third baseman for my boy Jose Ramirez out there in Cleveland, him and Francisco Lindor teaming back up.
Yeah.
9 years later after losing to the Cubs.
Mauricio, Beatty, and Vientos.
All three of them. Your infield needs. You got a shortstop. You got a third baseman. Beatty plays second. Have fun. Cleveland Guardians.
Jeff McNeil is your everyday second baseman?
Sure. And we have Jose Ramirez at third. I mean, look at that lineup. We're winning now.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree.
That contract, right? He signed like a discount.
Yeah,
like
he's got a very good contract, a very team friendly contract.
He's got a no trade clause. Why wouldn't he want to win? I mean, come on now. Cleveland's awful. They got players betting against the game. Let's go.
Yeah, no. Well, listen, you would have thought that when he signed the contract. But he took you would expect him to try and hit free agency, but instead he loves being there. I mean, so you can't dismiss that. He took a very team friendly contract. So he makes $19 million this year. So what is that? Prorated to, let's just say, you know, $9 million. And then 21, 23, 25 over the next 3 years. And then he's a free agent. So, yeah, that is a doable contract for the New York Mets. There's no doubt. You would be getting him for, he's 32 now. It would be 33, 34, 35. That's a little old for David Stern's tastes and liking. But, yeah. I mean, I would make this lineup really potent. I mean, he is, you know, one of the best hitters in the game, one of the best third basemen in the game. That would be an enormous coup if they could do that. Now, listen, you're hoping you get a lot out of Vientos. Beatty, Vientos, Mauricio for Jose Ramirez is an interesting trade. It's not terrible. I'm trying to think if it's enough. I mean, I don't think it is. I mean, Vientos is already been here. I don't know how many years left. Was last year the first year or the 2 years ago? So he's right. So this is his third year under the, you know, so he's probably got, he's got another 2 years. He's got three more years of arbitration after this. So you got him under control for 3 years. He's having a miserable season. Beatty hasn't proven he could hit the major league level. Like, that's part of the problem. Like, these guys haven't haven't really established themselves, and Mauricio has been overmatched at times, like, and has an injury track record, like, it's probably not enough. You still there or no?
No, I'm just dreaming.
You got to give up. You got to give up one of your big time prospects. You got to be you're going to have to give up. And Cleveland loves pitching. You're going to have to throw Sproat in there. You're going to have to, like, you know, throw one of those guys. You're going to have to throw Tong in there right now. You're going to have to do something like that. I don't think the three guys you gave are enough.
Tonight, Cohen declared the Mets the Fab Four. Nimmo, Soto, Lindor, Alonso.
Yes, the Fab Four.
Nimmo,
I saw
what a
that.
Freak season. That's the dad power. He had a baby this year. I mean, he's having his best season as a Met. It's nice to see.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Was Nimmo's having the season? Is that what we said? Nimmo? Is Nimmo having the best year of his Met career? I don't know. I wouldn't think so.
Highly arguable.
Yeah, I mean, I know his on-base percentage has continued to dip. It's not the same as it was. He looked awful for a stretch before getting put in the two-hole, which has really kind of like, and now he's hitting leadoff. But they put him in the two-hole. That kind of rejuvenated him. Now he's hitting leadoff since they moved Lindor out of it. But is it? Yeah, I could look at his numbers.
Power-wise, the argument that he might end up with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the most home runs he's ever hit in the year is 24, and the most ribbies he ever had is 90. So right. A chance for both of those.
His OPS is what?
His on-base percentage is abysmal. It's 317.
Yeah.
I mean, he was at 401 four years ago.
No, it's way down. His on-base percentage is way down.
I mean, and even if you want to go with a more average number, like he'd had 400 back-to-back seasons, that's a little extreme.
Yeah.
But he was at 366 for 2 years after that, and now it's dropped. What did it drop? 30 points the next year, and then another 15 this year, down to 317.
And what's
pathetic.
Yeah, what's his OPS now? What's his slugging? What is it? What is the total?
His OPS is at 787, which actually isn't too far off of those years where he had one where it was 888. But outside of that, he's sitting around 780 most of his career.
Yeah. So I mean, it's right there. He's having a solid year. It was looking trending in the wrong direction. And then they moved him the second, and he started to pick it up since then. But yes, the Fab Four, the Core Four. I don't think you were in the right to say Core Four, but the Fab Four, no doubt about it. And that's what you're looking for. You're looking for a specific. Listen, Nimmo's a nice player. It's the three. You are looking for Alonso. You are looking for Lindor, and you are looking for Soto. You are looking for the three of them to carry this team. And last night, that's exactly what you got. And you really haven't seen it all that much this year. They haven't been going all together at the same time. But that's what you're looking for. 888-808-1019. Quick break. We'll come right back after this. We'll do a little bit on the Knicks head coach and Mike Brown's press conference. We'll get into 4 o'clock. We'll say good morning. We'll continue to take your baseball calls, your Knick calls, as we take it until 5 o'clock in the warm-up show. McMonagle here with you on the Fan. Be right back. Talking a lot about baseball, Yankees and Mets. I just got a few minutes here before the top. Two very interesting things. Well, one very interesting happened twice yesterday. One of the more exciting plays. Everyone says, oh, the most exciting play in baseball is the triple. Well, I'll one-up you. How about an inside-the-park home run? You don't see it very often. And yesterday, not only did we see it twice with Butler for the A's and Patrick Bailey for the Giants, but in their own way, they bookended the game. Like, Butler hits a leadoff. The first time I think I saw it since the 1930s for the A's to hit a leadoff inside the park home run, and Patrick Bailey hit a walk-off inside the park home run for the San Francisco Giants last night. Two inside-the-park home runs on the same day. One started the game, one finished the game. And the one in San Francisco to finish the game, I mean, that's as exciting a play as you could possibly have. I mean, for Met fans, obviously it's against Philadelphia. But it's with one out in the bottom of the ninth, Philly leads 3-1 with runners at the corners. So two on, down by two against Philadelphia. Bailey hits one off of the wall in, you know, the famous brick building out there, the famous brick wall out in right center field, and it just completely careens towards center field. And the center fielder is just chasing it down. and he runs all the way around. And Bailey's a catcher, so, I mean, it had to get away for him to run all the way around the bases. But two inside-the-park home runs on the same day. One starts a game, and then give me that stat again, Zoo. It was he hits a normal home run in the third inning, and it's the first time in Major League Baseball history that a player has hit a conventional home run and a walk and a inside-the-park home run in the same game in the first three innings?
Yes, I believe that's the stat I saw, and definitely stress the fact that it's the first three innings of a game, because he was the leadoff hitter.
Yes.
Bang. That's what you
his
want.
His first two at-bats was a inside-the-park home run and then a conventional home run. And the first time that's ever happened in Major League Baseball in the stretch of three innings. That's crazy. And then to have a walk-off inside the park, I can't think of a more exciting play. That's about as exciting a baseball play as you can have. A walk-off, and as that ball is rolling just like towards nobody in center field, and you know, one, the game is now tied at the very least. And it wasn't even a close play. He comes walking. There's not even a play at the plate. Amazing.
I mean, that's one of those that just, if you're in the crowd for that, that's lifelong.
And that's another thing I love about baseball. It is ballparks are unique. Ballparks are different, and that's a road. That's a a road team, an outfield, and Philadelphia play there every year. Depending on who, I got to double check to see who was in center. But like, you're not familiar with the ballpark. You're not sure of the angles. That's a unique looking, different angled ballpark. It's not a uniform, gridiron like we play in football, or uniform. As we all have learned from watching Hoosiers, every hoop's the same size, every court's the same. Baseball is unique. We all know the short porch, and Judge took advantage of the short porch yesterday, and he's done that a lot, going the opposite field. So did Stanton, although his went over 400 feet, so that's no slouch. But unique ballparks, different angles, different things, and you see players who aren't familiar with it. We've seen it time and time again, left fielders who are unfamiliar with the Green Monster in Boston, or the triangle out there in Boston, or even that little corner of as the Mets are playing out in Baltimore, that little triangle out in the right field foul line, that balls sometimes go into there. So it's unique. And then to see a walk-off inside the park home run to beat Philadelphia, to now even this division for the New York Mets, that's quite a night. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. We'll come back. We'll say good morning after the update. We'll take it one more hour to the warm-up show. We'll get a little bit more into the baseball, and as well talk about the Knicks and the demotion. The demotion that is sending shockwaves through the NBA universe. If you could stay awake through the press conference to hear it. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. We'll be right back.